The Landing, Roseburg's newest senior living community, happy to announce they'll be opening in August, a distinctive place that believes people make all the difference. At The Landing, you'll find apartments and rooms to fit every need, and your rent will never be raised. Contact The Landing, a senior living community, 672-9696, 672-9696.
From the Midas of Roseburg studio, KQEN weather forecast today, sunny and 94 degrees. Tonight, clear and 61 for a low. Tomorrow, sunny and 92. Wednesday, sunny and 88. And by Thursday, cooling off to a reasonable sunny and 84. It's currently 84 degrees. KQEN news time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. We appreciate you spending this time every weekday with us for Inside Douglas County. We're going to do another legislative check-in today. Talk with State Senator Floyd Przanski. And Floyd, good afternoon. Thanks for being on with us.
Kyle, thank you very much. Hope your day's going well.
Well, it's been a very busy time, busy year to be a member of the legislature. Do you ever remember a pace that seems like it just won't stop?
No. 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 It's interesting, even though we're, quote-unquote, not in session, we are fielding a lot of work, at least the members who are on various committees that are gearing up for the special sessions. And the last two weeks, I've had meetings 3 days a week, 2 hours for just one committee. And we were scheduled to do three this week, but because of conflicts with a different committee, those have now been postponed for next week. And so my day will be filled up with others. So, no, it's quite interesting for how much activity we have ongoing. And I've heard this from many people in the process, not just members of the legislature, but the staff, as well as lobby and other interested parties, about how it seems like it's been nonstop basically since COVID.
So with legislators being part-time, technically employees, how do you make this work with your quote-unquote day job?
Well, the first 4.5 months after the governor called the state of emergency in the sense the executive orders came out, my courts basically shut down. So for the last 4.5 months, I've not been in any of the courts that I service. This last 2 weeks, though, Florence is one of the courts they've opened up. So I've been integrating that back in. And so it's just one of those situations that for the citizen legislature, what I attempt to do is have schedules that do not interfere with mine or other members' day activities, since we are a citizen legislature. But as you can imagine, you have a lot of individuals that schedules are very diverse, and we can't always accommodate everyone. So some people do make meetings, some don't get to make the meetings, and hopefully we'll able to keep everyone abreast of what's happened, so when we get ready to make decisions, we'll all be fully informed.
Oregon has always had this tradition of a citizen legislator and the idea that people would be there for a limited period of time, and even for quite some time. You didn't have the annual sessions. You had every other year and then some special or very short sessions. Seems like it's shifting. Is it just the current situation we're in, or has there been any talk that lawmakers might need to become full-time positions at some point?
Well, I'm going to say most of the individual members I've talked to do not want to see us turn into a California or a U.S. Congress being there full-time year-round. I think you really do lose a perspective of your community when you're that far removed from your community on that length of time. I do believe, though, that we need to be looking at how we address our work and how we're going to move forward. This situation that we find ourselves in is very similar to what the legislature back in 2001, when I was not in the legislative body at that time, that is when they had the bottom fall out of the economy, and if I remember correctly, they had five, if not six, special sessions in 1 year. And so you could imagine, I can imagine, based on what we're doing now, that it's very similar type of pace. So we're kind of in a unique situation of having to deal with a significant crisis, both on the health side as well as our economics of the state and individuals. So that is why I feel that the need is there. We, as the legislature, we've signed up to do this work, and we have to accommodate the needs of the state. And in some cases, that means sacrifices in other areas of our life, including our professional lives.
There's already been one special session. Have we gotten any kind of idea as to when the next one will be?
It's based on what I've heard as of last week. And of course, this is always subject to change. It looks like it will not occur before August, and it looks like it won't be until the week of the 10th at the earliest. But with that said, I take a deep breath, and we could easily come back in earlier than that. The issue, I believe, for the governor is that this next special session is geared to be the budget cycle, special session, dealing with everything that didn't get taken care of during the 2020 session when the walkout occurred and we weren't able to pass certain budgets that needed to be done. And now with the adjustments that need to occur because of the economics being upside down, and the need to trim in different areas of the state expenditures. So the question at this point for the governor, at least what's been given to us, is that she's now waiting once again to see what the feds are going to do with any additional relief package. That was the reason why we didn't take up budgets the very first special session. And I was kind of surprised that that was the case, because we at that point had the CARES Act out. We knew what was going on, but they were still waiting for definitions and application of the rules that they were putting together, meaning on the federal side, as to how the state would be impacted. So at this point, I believe they're waiting to see whether or not the Congress will pass another relief act. And if they do, it's anticipated that may not occur until the first week of August. That's why it's more than likely that we would be coming in on the second week of August. I hope the sooner the better, because we're now at a stage where we're less than a year for our fiscal balanced budget is required. And we have definitely some adjustments that have to be made so we can maintain what's required by the Constitution, and that is a balanced budget at the end of the biennium.
Congress back in session today. We're hearing national reports of both sides of the aisle with various proposals out there that are being talked about more. And of course, the last time around, we had some very quick, some would argue too quick and not well thought out movement about some of the stimulus packages and things like that. So I suppose there's a potential that it could move quickly again. But my suspicion would be that this time Congress is going to take more time before they get to what might come next in terms of stimulus and also aid to states.
I agree with you. The only thing is, it's not coming late. I mean, they've been working on this. Of course, the House has already passed their version, which is now sitting in the Senate. There's been a delay in the Senate for other reasons, which I can't answer. But the Senate is geared now to be starting work on this now. I've been told behind the scenes there's been a lot of discussion that's been ongoing the last couple of weeks, trying to figure out exactly where the Senate can come to grips with what they feel they need to do, as well as taking in the considerations and version that was been put out by the House. Unfortunately, what I've also heard is that now the president's office, his administration, are really starting to push and put pressure on the Senate Republicans in Congress to not provide for additional revenue money for testing on the COVID, which really seems kind of backwards as to what we need to be doing. But apparently this is a strategy that has come out of the White House. And I'm not sure if this is somehow to try to play down the issues and the rampant exponential growth of the virus throughout the country, or if it's something else that they've got they're focused on. But for whatever reason, it doesn't seem like public health is the focus for the federal administration as much as it has been in our state and even in Congress. And so hopefully the Senate Republicans will do the right thing and ensure that all states, including their states, have the proper testing equipment, all of the the testing ingredients that they need for the to actually run the test. I've heard that in some cases, some of the states that have had low infection rates are seeing now having a hard time getting the agents that are necessary to do some of the tests, because many of those agents are being shifted to states that have very high profile exponential growth to try to do additional testing there versus having enough testing to go around the country.
I was just thinking about, as a member of the legislature and as with other elected officials as well, summertime is often the time that you go out and greet folks. Some folks are running, depending on what the election cycle is set. You're out at county fairs, you're out at community events, you're out at things, none of which are happening this year. How different is that?
I think it's really different. I just happen to be in my off year for the election, so I'm not faced with what many candidates and incumbents candidates are faced with under the current scenario. But people are becoming more, unique in their approach to ensure that they can reach and speak to voters, and a lot of that is by phone, which is, you know, kind of interesting, an approach that you would see it so early in the campaign cycle, because usually here in this period of the summer, you don't have as much phone work and, let's call it, get out the vote type of approach where you're trying to make that type of contact with your constituents. Instead, as you're saying, you go to different social events, civic events, that you can actually have a little bit more downtime with individuals and have a little bit more conversation just in general. But because that venue's been shut down, many candidates are now looking for, how do I reach the voters? And I'm not sure if people are hanging out at the post office, but that's still a place that I would be going if I was up for election this cycle, knowing that individuals, especially in more rural communities, do rely on their post offices for collecting of their mail and doing business.
As we've seen some folks do, rather than community meetings or town hall meetings, now, just like so many other things, doing them under Zoom or some other format of an online way to communicate with people in a large group at one time.
That's true. That social platforming is definitely giving us a new perspective, just like I'm hearing in the business community. Many individuals, because they've been forced with the COVID restrictions of getting out or going to work, have been working from home, and it does seem like we're going to see, even on that front, a significant change as to how people conduct business, in the sense of not maybe having a brick and mortar presence as to the level that they currently do with employees inside those buildings, as compared to many people doing the work from home. And it's no different in the reaching out in the town halls, even our town halls that we're doing, that are not election oriented, have taken the same path.
And in some cases as well, depending on what part of the state you're in, some folks are able to do essentially low occupancy meetings in person, but they're also seeming to be mixing those with having an online component so people can either come or attend via Zoom or whatever the format happens to be. The other thing I've noticed for members of the legislature, as you've had so many things going on, especially in the spring in terms of all these meetings at the height of things, is the ability to maybe time manage a little better, because you're not traveling 30 minutes, an hour, whatever, from meeting A to meeting B. You're simply, in some cases, going from one iPad to the other.
So well spoken. And it's not time management in the sense of getting from place to place. Those extra minutes that you need to go from point A to point B for a meeting is now being filled up with these virtual meetings. And, having three back-to-back meetings, 8:30, 9, and 10 o'clock, and not getting off until 11, and then doing basically the same type of a cycle again in the afternoon, you're easily got 6+ hours on an electronic device, which may not be the best thing for everybody's health, but I mean that's what we're doing, because that's the way we can actually accomplish the work that we need to get done, especially when you're preparing for a certainty of a special session. You need to have that work done on the front end, because once you get there, the last thing anyone wants to do is hurry up and wait. And I think the constituents would rightfully be upset if we went into a special session not prepared to take care of whatever the specific issues we're going to focus on, get in and get out and move on down the road instead of sitting there twiddling your thumbs waiting for someone to come up with a concept, write a bill, and then discuss it.
Going to take a break. State Senator Floyd Prezanski on Inside Douglas County, the interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1250 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1251, Lars Larson coming at 1 o'clock on News Radio 1240 KQEN. On tomorrow's Inside Douglas County, you'll meet the new interim CEO of the YMCA of Douglas County. He's splitting his time with this facility and the one in Grants Pass as well. We'll have that conversation, our first chance to meet with him tomorrow on Inside Douglas County. State Senator Floyd Prezanski with us on today's program, talking about the pace, the schedule for lawmakers. What are you seeing in terms of items that might make the special session agenda?
Well, at this point, for the second special session, the focus will be on the budget bills that, as I mentioned, that weren't completed in the 2020 session, as well as adjustments to those, even those budget bills that were ready to go, based on the fallout of the economy with the response to the COVID-19 virus. So that's the focus. The question is, what, if any, policy bills are going to be taken up? As you can imagine, some of my colleagues are overachievers in the sense of they say, hey, we got a chance, we want this, this, and this done, whatever that might be, has little to no relevance as to a need to be done through a special session versus a standard regular session. So those have to be ferreted out by the leadership. And then we, if you remember this last, the first special session, we had six bills that dealt with, I'm going to call it police accountability. Five of them were ID'd that way, and the other was dealing with the bargaining and negotiations and arbitration decisions on conduct of officers. And there's been some discussion that even though we were not able to get many of those bills ready for the first special session, that we should continue to work and strive to make modifications to those during the second one. Unfortunately, because of a committee we now have that's been set up, it's a joint transparency on policing and use of force, there's been a lot of individuals saying, now this committee's been formed, we should be running a lot more through the special session. And that's just not my style as a chair of judiciary. I feel it's very important that we have everyone to the table that are interested parties and really work through whatever the concepts are before we come up with whatever we think is a fix and put it in a legislative form to pass a bill, because you need to think these things through and ensure that we're not going to have unintended consequences that could cause even more grave outcomes than what the current law might be.
As both the chair of judiciary and a person who is a prosecutor in your quote-unquote day job, what are your thoughts about some of these police accountability proposals that have been out there?
I think there's a place for that. I mean, clearly we have a need for transparency. I think the general public want to make certain that no one's above the law and everyone's following the proper procedures and protocol that are required. And part of the issue is making certain that if an officer should do something that is, violates someone's civil rights, that they can be held accountable for that type of work. And of course, in some cases, it's how do you actually know that that even occurred? So one of the bills that we passed is basically a duty to intervene. And so an officer now is being mandated that they have a duty to actually intervene if they see a fellow officer violating someone's civil rights in the sense, or taking liberties that are out of the policy and procedures of their agency. And we also have built in there, which you can imagine, a whistleblower protection for those officers, because some officers have actually confided in me that they'd like to bring something forward, but they're afraid that if they do bring something forward regarding the conduct of a colleague, that they will be singled out and they will have retribution from either the rank and file, from the supervision management side, or somewhere else. And so it's one of those situations that you need to ensure that individuals who see something and can act on it, and two, do it in a judicious, prudent way where they're not hurting themselves or others, and at the same time ensuring that that information goes up the command structure to ensure that the supervisors know and that action can be taken to help correct somebody that may be out of compliance. Not every issue that would come before management on this scenario is something that's over egregious, that really is bad. But at the same time, if you don't address things at the very beginning, you can in fact see where people become more isolated and actually independent of doing what is required, and there's no check and balance. So that's what that bill is supposed to do. You know, I think just kind of ironically, when you think about what's happened up in Portland, now we have federal intervention that has come in. These individuals are not wearing any marked identifying uniforms, no badge or ID, name or anything on there. And I've heard from even local law enforcement, meaning Oregon law enforcement, they don't even know who these individuals are or who they're dealing with. And you can only imagine if the law enforcement doesn't know who the other law enforcement is, the citizens sure in the heck aren't either.
One other component of all this would be potential impacts on some of these reforms on union contracts between officers and the police union and agencies that they're working for, in terms of how you handle situations and what part of maybe disciplinary action remains part of the record that you can see and what part isn't.
That's true. And that's one of those areas that we have been working on, and we actually moved the dial by passing the bill that says an arbitrator cannot just ceremoniously decide that a person should not be sanctioned, or the sanction that was given to them was over or beyond what he or she, meaning the arbitrator, thought was appropriate compared to the command structure within that agency. And so, you know, we're going to see more and more of that, and some of that will become more transparent in the sense of putting it out there for public consumption. But there is a point where I think you have to consider at the same time, you do have employees, and they have some rights for their own personnel files. So all of that stuff has to be taken into consideration.
A lot going on. State Senator Floyd Przanski, thanks for being on today.
Kyle, thank you very much. Hope your afternoon is cool.
All right, 12:58 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. For Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.